Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices today. I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor of Medical Economics.
In early November, the Supreme Court will hear a case challenging the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. It will be the third time the court has heard challenges to the law since Congress passed it in 2010. During the ensuing years, the ACA has brought significant change to American healthcare, from making insurance affordable to more people, to encouraging experiments with new reimbursement models. The law has also become steadily more popular, with a recent poll showing that 62% of Americans now support it. So what would it mean to primary care physicians to have the law overturned, especially now that we're in the middle of a pandemic? To gain some insight into that question, I'm speaking today with Dr. Jacqueline Fincher, a longtime internist with the Center for Primary Care in Thompson, Georgia, and since May of this year, president of the American College of Physicians. Welcome, Dr. Fincher, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be here with you.
I'll start by asking, what are some of the ways the Affordable Care Act has changed primary care medicine? What has been its impact on practices such as yours and on your patients?
So I think one of the most important things to begin with was the pent-up demand that was there. And so now that we had people who actually had insurance, and we had many who didn't, especially in our rural area of Thompson, Georgia, one of the big things was the availability now of preventive services that they did not have access to before. So these were the essential benefits packages that were in all the new insurance products that availed patients of all the preventive services for no additional cost, and that was the key. So they could get their annual physical, they could get their mammogram or their bone density or their colonoscopy at no additional cost if it was a preventive service. So that was huge. And so there was, like I said, that pent-up demand that had been there. And so that is now just kind of part of the workflow, if you will, in terms of the change in our practice patterns. When patients come in and they are due for their annual physical and they need those preventive things done, my nurses by protocol already know they need to go ahead and offer that vaccine to that patient, be it a flu vax or a pneumonia vaccine. They need to go ahead and schedule the mammogram or the bone density, or they need to say, you know, you haven't had your colonoscopy. Have you thought about when you want to do that? And can we go ahead and schedule you with somebody? So it's changed the workflow of our office in many ways. Some of the difficult things that have occurred in our practice with the essential benefits packages and the insurance plans that have taken on much more scrutiny of everything in terms of really demanding prior authorizations of any diagnostic tests that are not preventive, or they have narrow networks of either where the patient can go. Maybe they can't go to the same place they've always had their mammogram or their colonoscopy. So they've been much more prescriptive, and which has also required an increase in the number of administrative staff that we have to have now to handle all the prior authorizations and all the things that we have to get for prescriptions that are denied or procedures that can't be done in one place but another, or can't be done without meeting very strict criteria. So that's created a tremendous increase in the administrative burden, especially on primary care physicians, because we're taking care of all of the patient, not just parts of them. And while specialists as well have to get prior authorizations, it's on a narrow group of services, and they kind of got that down. Whereas for us, it is a huge range of services, from getting a CT of the head to seeing a podiatrist for their feet and everything in between. So I think that the administrative burden that has come with particularly the private health insurance companies and these packages that they have has been very difficult because we are being asked to do more and more.
In your practice, has it made a difference in the overall health of your patients?
I think if it weren't for the continuing significant increase in obesity and diabetes, they would be. Here in the South, in the rural South, that's especially true. But I do think that patients now have an expectation of, well, I get my annual physical and I get my health maintenance lab work and my preventive services like mammograms and colonoscopies for no additional charge. So I would say that we have been able to honestly make sure that patients are getting those things. And when we find things, we are finding them earlier, where there is much easier, less expensive interventions than when people would wait because they couldn't afford to come to the doctor or couldn't afford to have the procedure. They would wait until they ended up in the emergency room with advanced disease. And that's, you know, that's been a huge, wonderful thing about the ACA is we are catching things so much earlier where they're much more treatable and don't require this kind of heroic, life-saving, at the end, do everything in the most expensive way that we have done in the past. A lot of the private plans, now again, with Medicare, straight Medicare is actually very easy for most physicians to work with. Doesn't pay as well, but is easier to work with. So all those people that are on employer-sponsored insurances or their own individual plan through the exchange, I think some of the bigger issues is plans that are the cheapest, they have these very high deductibles. And so when you have a $5,000 to $10,000 deductible, if you're basically healthy and all you need is your annual covered health physical and your annual covered health lab work and any other covered preventive service, you're good. But if you have chronic medical problems, then we need to follow you more closely and you need to be seen on a more regular basis with lab work that is no longer considered preventive and with potentially diagnostic tests like something as simple as an EKG or a chest x-ray. Well, if you have a $5,000 to $10,000 deductible, all of that's coming straight out of your pocket. And so people, because they are underinsured for kind of the routine maintenance things for that they come to primary care for, then it makes it very difficult to honestly try to get them to come in and do what they need to do to take care of those chronic problems so they don't go into a heart attack or a stroke or congestive heart failure or diabetes out of control. So I think there's some pluses and minuses here. And I would say we all knew that the ACA was not the perfect law, but it got us a major leap forward.
So that's the situation we're in now. Let me ask you to look forward a little bit. And if the court overturns the law, do you think there are elements of it that will stay in place, or will we just entirely revert back to where we were in 2009?
So I think the reality is is understanding what really the decision is before the court. And that has to do with, is the mandate, which the court, you know, in the big court case said is a tax and therefore is constitutional. Mm-hmm. Since the Congress made that tax penalty zero, then is that separate from all the other parts of the law or not? And that is the big question of severability, right, from the rest of the law. So, you know, do you say, yes, it's unconstitutional, therefore the whole 1,000-page law is gone? Or do you say, well, that part is unconstitutional, but the other parts are severable or separate from that one issue? In many ways, the court probably wants to make this as narrow as possible. That's typically how they have ruled on things like this, and certainly with a more conservative court. And honestly, there's a lot of things that I think, because the country is so divided and because the court typically takes in particularly a conservative court, takes a more narrow view of the laws and the precedents, I would find it would be extremely unusual for them to say that not only was the mandate unconstitutional, but also not severable from the rest of the law, and therefore the whole ACA is out. I just don't think that's going to happen, because it would throw our whole country's healthcare system into total chaos and create just so much chaos and uncertainty for us, the people.
Well, that's a good segue to my next question, which is whether you have discussed these possibilities with your colleagues, either in your own practice or at the ACP, and what you think might happen, and are you preparing for different eventualities, different outcomes?
So I will say that in our practice, we haven't discussed it at all. We've been a little busy.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, with the pandemic, we have been focused on viability, us remaining in practice. Are we going to be able to stay in practice and pay our staff? I mean, it's been survival mode, really, the last 7 months. I will tell you, from the ACP, obviously, a lot of some of the same in terms of being focused on the pandemic and advocating and creating the policies and the advocacies and the recommendations on being able to deal with the pandemic, but keeping practices going and giving advice and helping our patients. But here's the thing, you know, way back in January this year in 2020, before all this other hit that seems like ancient history now, we came out with a better vision for U.S. healthcare. If we could design a U.S. healthcare system that covered everybody, where everyone had access to the care that they need at a price they and our country could afford, what would that look like? And how would you change payment and delivery form to be able to create that? We laid that out in a series of four papers that were published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Mm-hmm. So we weren't thinking about particularly the ACA being repealed so much as taking some of the good things that it had, but building way better and expanding all those options to create the best options that we can afford to do in this country. Because it builds on the good things of the ACA, but changes a lot of the payment delivery reform so that we continue to have primary care physicians. That continues to be a huge source of concern for the college and for other primary care organizations like the family physicians and the pediatricians. We still have not really put the investment in this country in primary care, because we know that if we did, we would have lower costs. We would have better care. People would have access to a primary care physician to prevent all those things and or discover them early. And having that access to really high value care would make all the difference. So the goal really is to make sure that we have that patients have access at an affordable cost, and they have the physicians and their clinical teams in place to provide the care.
Does the possibility of the law being overturned ever come up with your patients? Is it ever a topic of discussion?
So I will say two things to that. I think people who have pre-existing conditions, they've had a cancer or they have significant chronic ongoing conditions that have private insurance, they are the ones that are worried and express concern, because they are concerned if the ACA goes away and then they are labeled pre-existing condition, that they will no longer be able to get or afford a possible insurance coverage. And again, remember beforehand, a lot of these people that did have pre-existing conditions, they could not get a plan at any cost. And so, you know, I think they are more acutely aware and more concerned about that. Now, having said that, I think that particularly people who have employer-sponsored health care, I think that the big concern they have this year is, are they going to have a job? We have, 10 to 20 million people this year that have lost their jobs, and thereby many of those have lost their insurance or any other option that was affordable. Because with employer-sponsored healthcare, of course, you are looking at a whole cohort of people in risk. But when you're looking on the exchange for yourself and what's affordable for similar amounts of money, it's a whole lot less. I think those two groups are probably more tuned in to those things than anybody else, because most people honestly don't understand all this. Hell, most physicians don't understand all this. I mean, I got a bill for my mother last week, and I'm going, this makes no sense. If I can't figure this out, how is anybody else supposed to do it?
And not to mention the impact it might have on the ability to bring COVID-19 under control if suddenly millions of people found themselves without health insurance.
Absolutely. And now realize we have, over 223,000 people who have been diagnosed with COVID. They now have a pre-existing condition, because we're already starting to see some potentially what looks like maybe long-term effects from COVID. They are really worried about this. So just in terms of, again, overturning ACA in the middle of a pandemic is very frightening to a lot of people. And I think when they know somebody that has gotten COVID, and especially one that's gotten very sick or who has died, that it makes them feel a lot more vulnerable. You know, it's no longer this thing that's out there that doesn't really affect me. It becomes, oh my gosh, if they can get it, I can get it. I need to be worried about this. And so I think it has put before the American people some really difficult choices. And, you know, I remember, you know, when the whole ACA was being discussed, you heard things like, no, I don't want the government involved in my health care. I don't want the government involved in my Medicare, which, you know, I heard that from some of my patients. And it was just like, no, you don't get it. That is government health care. And honestly, many of our patients are also veterans and have been through the Veterans Administration healthcare. And some of them have certainly had better experiences than others through the different VAs. But in general, they feel like they have gotten affordable care, particularly those people who had related things with regard to combat, you know. So there are things that the VA is especially really good at in terms of dealing with the disabilities of our veterans from war or combat. And so I think that, you know, when you've been in those systems, you know, either the Medicare system or the VA system, many people are very happy and satisfied with those. So they don't feel this concern over, you know, the government getting involved. But, you know, as I've told people, you know, it's going to take more than just the government to get us to universal access and coverage. It's going to take all of us doing everything that we can to be responsible for ourselves, to do the right things, to provide the options for patients, particularly with regard to primary care.
If a doctor wants to see provisions of the Affordable Care Act remain in place, even if the law is overturned, what can he or she do? What courses of action are open to them?
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, I have built my whole professional career on advocacy for my patients. And honestly, that is why I am now the president of the American College of Physicians, because I've been advocating all along for my patients and the needs that they had. And so I think that is incredibly important for physicians to be able to do that through whatever means works best for them. So advocating at the state level, so incredibly important. And having, you know, if nothing else, some kind of contact with your local state legislators, either by email or by phone, not just when they're in session, but when they're not in session, when they actually have time to listen to you. That's critical. On things like the state health exchanges, on things like the physician workforce in your state, on things like expansion of Medicaid in your state. These are all huge issues at the state level and so incredibly important. Then there are obviously huge issues that we can advocate for at the national level in terms of our own congressmen and senators and with regulators. And when they put out a rule, giving that feedback, you know, what always seems to kind of make that connection, I think, with any legislator is that personal story, because it humanizes the problem. So if you just go with a bunch of statistics, it doesn't resonate with those people as human beings. And that's what you're trying to connect with them on. As a human being, I am concerned about our other human beings that are in your district. And here's what's going on in our district with patients that I am seeing. And these are my concerns, and these would be the options for them if you did this, or voted this way, or voted that way. So I think that we have a very powerful voice. You know, even legislators, congressmen, they still have their own physicians. Mm-hmm. And I hope that those that are physicians for them use those opportunities to help them better understand the issues from the physician perspective, from the patient perspective.
Thank you. This has been very helpful.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And be sure to visit our website at medicaleconomics.com, where you'll find all the latest news about the business of healthcare. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.